CliffCentral.com.
How's it, everyone? Welcome to our new but old show. We have now renamed the show Futurology, so you can follow us on the hashtag. It's Brett Levian, and I have my favorite wingman, Brett Lindsayan, with us as well today.
Sup? How you doing?
Good, and you? We thought futurologist, digital philosopher would be a good way to start off the
good
show.
Good place to hang out. Yeah, why not?
Fantastic. Well, I think before we get too excited, a little bit of a sad note. Mr. Marvin Minsky passed away today.
Yeah.
So for those of you that don't know who he was pretty much the pioneer of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And as a philosopher, you want to weigh in on that, Brett?
Oh, man. Well, what hasn't he done? What's he going to do is the thing. I mean, futurology.
Well, he ain't waking up today.
No, unfortunately not. But maybe his brain will keep living on what he shared with everybody else. But there's a, I found a good article in the New York Times, and the first paragraph just says, Marvin Minsky, who combined a scientist's thirst for knowledge with a philosopher's quest for truth as a pioneering explorer of artificial intelligence, work that helped inspire the creation of the personal computer and the internet. He was 88 when he died. So
that's pretty cool.
Good innings.
Yeah, that's a good innings. Much better than what England had today.
Talk about a legacy. I mean, that guy's got something that's going to happen around for a while.
Yeah, no, awesome. So, okay, that's enough with the sad stuff. We had exciting stuff, sad stuff. But now, today we got a really, really cool show, even if I say so.
Nice.
So sitting with us today is Steve Whitford from DGL, which is the Digital Gaming League, if I'm not mistaken. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve, basically, we're talking about gaming as a sport, as a professional sport, correct?
Yep.
All right, well, take us through it. Give us a little bit of an overview of what this new, or not new, but this trend is all about.
Mm. So DGL, as you said, stands for Digital Gaming League, and we just had a launch last week with Telkom, who backs the DGL, and the launch basically was about the professionalizing of esports in South Africa. And so Telkom announced a three-tiered kind of approach, right at the top, working with the top multi-gaming organizations in the country, or MGOs, and there are eight of them, and they're going to be playing for R1 million in cash.
A million rand?
R1 million in cash. So that's at the top, and then underneath that there's going to be a league, which will be a continuation of the previous Do Gaming League, now rebranded as the Digital Gaming League.
Okay.
Where we had about 6,000 gamers before, so that's kind of your mid to high tier gamer, and then underneath that we're going to have a more casual opportunity for guys who are just getting into playing other people online to get into teams. You know, come to grips with what it is to play online, be competitive online. So that's what we announced. Yeah, that's what we announced last week, and announced the eight MGOs, five Joburg-based, three Cape Town-based, although they've got players all over the country. And yeah, they're going to be competing towards the end of the year for in a tournament for R1 million in cash.
Wow, that's amazing. So before we continue, I just want to also remind everyone, the phone number to get us on the studio is 0861-555-189, or you can hit us up on Twitter at CliffCentral.com, or through Facebook, or through WeChat on Cliff Central. But I think, you know, everyone thinks of games and gaming and that. We have another little surprise there, but before I announce that, I did a little bit of research into it preparing for today's show, and I see that last year in the US, this was a $750 million industry, this professional game sports.
Mm.
And the guy or the team, I wasn't sure which way I read it, that won last year got $18 million.
Yeah, so it was $18 million in total for a competition called the International 5, which is a Dota 2 tournament. It's about $18.8 million, and that was for the whole tournament. There were 16 teams which participated, and that came down to a final between, you know, which Evil, a team called Evil Geniuses won, and they took home $6.6 million in cash between five of them.
Sure. That's incredible. That's right. So enough of the teasing. I said we have something really special lined up today, and we do. We have got, all the way from the United Kingdom via Skype, Mr. Paul Chalona. Steve, you've had the privilege of meeting Paul. His hashtag or his handle is also known as @RedEye, for those in the gaming industry and the know. Let's bring him on the line, and let's say how's it to the really cold United Kingdom.
How you doing, guys?
How's it going?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, and it is very cold here, unfortunately. I've returned to sub-zero temperatures.
Well, we didn't ask you to leave, Paul. You could have stayed.
I would love to have stayed.
Thank you so much for making the time to join us today. I don't know if you got to hear any of what we were chatting about briefly.
I did, yeah.
I mean, we're all blown away hearing these type of numbers and the figures and the prize money. And I mean, before we get into the details, you know, I remember as a kid when my parents said to me, "So what do you want to be when you're older?" If I answered accountant or lawyer, that was awesome. If I'd said like painter or rock star or surfer, because I come from the coast, I would have been sent to my room. You know, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, what happens if my son comes to me and he says, you know, I want to be a gamer. You know, how do we handle that?
I think it's a good question. And it's going to be a question that I think the next generation of parents will have to answer. But I think, you know, I think I said this to NCA last week is, you know, I think when I was 5, I wanted to be an astronaut. By the time I was 7, I wanted to be a pop star. And by the time I was 9, I wanted to be a professional footballer. And all three of those are fairly unrealistic jobs to aspire to, but it's great to have dreams, right? So you don't want to knock the kids for having dreams, but you want to make them realistic and understand that, you know, even in football, which, you know, 60, 70, 100,000 professional players in the world, it's still a very niche job. So you want to make sure that they're being realistic with what they can achieve, but at the same time, you don't want to dampen their dreams. So I don't see being a professional video gamer as being any different to aspire to a professional footballer.
Well, given the numbers that's been thrown around now with Steve in studio, say hi, Steve.
How are you, Paul?
How you doing, Steve?
Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been ages. At least, what, 3 days?
You know, I actually see that a question that's come through is, can you make a career in gaming? And we know that. In fact, there's a call that's already come through, a guy by the name of Andrew, who's dying to talk to you, Paul. Can I connect him quickly?
Sure.
Andrew? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Andrew. How's it going?
Fine, thanks yourself.
Good, thanks. You're live on Futurology, and Paul is listening.
Hi.
Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Always good, man. Always good.
Good.
It's a talk show, Andrew. You need to talk. Have we still got him? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Ask your question.
Chuck, I just want to ask you one thing, because you're one of the greatest casters, commentators I've ever listened to, and I've always followed, you know, coached with Anders and all those type of guys. What do you think is the possibility that South Africa will ever be able to host something like Klujnapoka, ESL type of tournaments in South Africa for international players like Na'Vi and Fnatic and even NIP to come and participate in South Africa?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know the answer fully, but I can tell you that I don't think it's that far away. I think that you as an industry in South Africa are further forward than you perhaps think you are. And I think there's a lot of teams and tournament runners that would like to come and visit South Africa at some point. And as video gaming and esports grows and gets bigger, it needs to be truly global if it's going to succeed. And to do that, it needs to come to South America, it needs to come to Australia, it needs to come to South Africa. So I see a future where, you know, you are going to see some of these top stars and top celebrities coming out to South Africa.
Oh, thanks. That's actually quite, I think most of the gamers in South Africa, one of their dreams to actually win their playing tournament is just the local people, it's the international guys as well. Obviously, our skill level in South Africa is on a different platform than international guys, but I think what the Digital Gaming League is doing now is actually building a nice platform for us. So I would just like to thank from all of the gamers, thanks for your guys' input. Thanks for Telkom for making this possible to actually get onto the platform and try to get international viewers also interested in South African gaming. Mm.
Steve, you want to weigh in on that? I mean, you've probably met some of the local guys as well to see what kind of level we're on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, after the noise last week, a journalist contacted us, and one of the questions was, when will South African gamers be able to go overseas? And the answer was, well, they went overseas in 2002, you know. So and many teams since. And I think having chatted to, I think most of those guys have gone and come back and talked to them about what the experience was like. The main comment, I guess, has been that on a skill level, we compare favorably when it comes to how fast you can click to shoot or how fast you can move around the map or whatever it is. However, I think the nature of where we are in the world, when it comes to, you know, things like lag and being delayed in being able to our gamers to interact with other gamers in game, has, as in the past, I mean, that it's been difficult for our players to play against other players in the rest of the world. And the result of that is that to some degree, we have a rather insular gaming community that certainly plays each other more than they play outside players. And so the comment was that came again and again was that our guys aren't exposed to the kind of tactics they see, you know, the strategies, the team dynamics, the team play, those kinds of things. And that's just a process of guys, of exposure, of players being able to get overseas, play more overseas, and be exposed to that kind of environment to be able to bring that back. And the teams that have gone have done that, brought that back, and been able to kind of deposit to other gamers locally, like how teams overseas play, what their strategies are, and that kind of thing. So, I think we've been around esports for a long time, but we've been, in a sense, isolated to a degree. It's changing. Teams are getting overseas more and more often.
Cool. Andrew, does that answer some of your questions?
Yes, definitely.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
No, pleasure, man. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Okay, cheers, eh? Good.
I actually have a question.
Yeah.
If I want to be a gamer.
But you're a player already, man.
Thanks, Brad. But if I do, and I want to be a gamer, who do I speak to? Where do I go? How can I...
Well, I think there's a process of getting involved. And if you look at the... I guess the journey of a gamer, and how that might happen. You're either going to buy a game like, say, FIFA, in BT Games or wherever, or you're going to download it onto your console and you're going to start playing. And you probably play, if you're playing console and you're playing FIFA, you probably have friends around. You start competing, so you get a feel for it and a flavor for it. If you're going to download a game like Counter Strike or Dota 2, you're going to download it onto your computer. And you have opportunity to start playing online, playing against local players, kind of starting to orientate. So I think the first step is you need to start playing, and you need to start playing against other people. Once you kind of started doing that, then you need to kind of orientate yourself within an online context of where are gamers on Facebook, how do you find them, what are the groups, that kind of stuff. Once you start doing that, you start finding opportunity to play, you know, say find guys who are in the same position as you. And
I
then
think it's basically just putting yourself out there.
Yeah, you put yourself out there. And then you go from there. You find guys to play with, and then you start forming a team, and then you start looking for opportunity to enter, and so you go.
Cool. Paul, you're still with us?
Absolutely.
Cool. I see a call's coming through, which I'm going to answer. And then I've got a question that we've lost it. Cool. So I got a question for you. And we talk about gaming and professional gaming. Now, if I take a step back and go into the physical world, and I hate using that word, being a digital person, but you know, some people aspire to be rugby players or soccer players or tennis players, whatever the sport is, and I use the word sport as, you know, the genre. Is there a specific game you have to get into? And why I mean that is, and I'm embarrassed to say it, I love Angry Birds, okay? I'm hearing the laughing here. You see? Okay, but I'm saying it out there, and I'm doing it publicly, but I enjoy Angry Birds, and I think I'm pretty good at it, and I figured out how to make those damn pigs disappear. But other guys play Counter-Strike. Other people play FIFA. You mentioned FIFA, like soccer. I mean, that takes a lot of skill. How does this esports world evolve?
Okay. So the easiest way of explaining this to people who... I mean, because there are 2 billion... people on planet Earth right now playing games. Okay, my nan plays games. She's in her 80s.
2 billion.
My dad plays games. There are 2 billion people playing video games, right? Okay.
Wow.
Not all of them aspire to be playing on a stage in front of 10,000 people or millions of people on TV. I understand that. And it's the same with any other sport, right? I can go and pick up a ball, and I can go down the park with some jumpers and put down some goalposts, and we can have some fun. And I'm not very good at it, but I'll have fun. I don't aspire to go and play for Manchester United, and frankly, who should or would?
Are we going to go into a different discussion now?
Before we drift off into, you know, slandering other football teams, I'll bring it back to this. Think of esports more like the Olympic Games or athletics rather than a sport, because you're right, one sport is football, rugby, cricket, whatever. And don't talk about the cricket today, please.
Sorry, don't talk about the what, Paul?
Don't talk about cricket today, okay. Please,
the cricket that we finally
I'm sore. I'm wearing a boxed shirt right now, thanks to Steve.
Good on you. Well done, Steve. Yeah. So is he, incidentally. He's sitting here wearing a boxed shirt as well.
Good. So think of it more like an Olympics Games or an athletics meet, because there are several disciplines within that, isn't there? You know, you've got 100 meters, you've got the long jump, you've got shot put, you've got javelin, you've got marathon running, and they're all very different. And it's very, very rare that one person will have the skills or the requisite skills to compete in all of those at an even level. Arguably, you've got the decathlon, and I understand that, but let's just pull that aside. There are different disciplines. They require different levels of stamina, fitness, muscle builds, and all different things, activities and actions.
Right.
And that's very like it is for me in esports. So within esports, you've got Counter-Strike. That's a first-person shooter. Well, you've also got Call of Duty, but that's also a first-person shooter. So they're very similar, but they may take slightly different skills. But the basics are very, very much the same. So you could swap between those games.
Okay.
Unlikely, however, that you're a very, very excellent first-person shooter player, like a Counter-Strike player, who could then transition to something like Dota or StarCraft or League of Legends, because those are completely different. It's the equivalent of saying Usain Bolt is brilliant at the 100 meters. He should totally throw a javelin.
Well, that was my point, though. That's what I was trying to get to.
But that's fine, because there are plenty of professional competitors in League of Legends, and there are plenty in Counter-Strike. Now, not every game is going to reach the kind of audiences or participation levels that other games do. So right now, the top three games are Counter-Strike, League of Legends, and Dota 2. And just behind that are a whole load of other games, including StarCraft and Call of Duty. They're all there, right? And they're all very popular, and they've all got lots of people watching. But likewise, there's lots of other... I play Rocket League, right? Which is a tremendously brilliant game, lots of fun. I have no aspiration to be a world champion in it, but it's a lot of fun to play, and I know that there are thousands of other people playing Rocket League at the same time. There is a small set of leagues going on and a small set of cups, but how many people are tuning in? Not many. Does that make it any less legitimate? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with any other sport. You know, you've got lots of people watching the cricket and the rugby and the football, but how many people are watching darts every year? Mm-hmm. Not many, but I can tell you, I really enjoyed watching the darts over Christmas.
Yeah, so esports isn't one thing. Esports is many things. So you got guys driving around in tanks shooting at each other in a game. Then you've got guys playing FIFA. Then you've got guys running around controlling little characters on the screen in a MOBA genre to first-person shooters. So in many ways, all of those things are their own kind of genre, just as soccer and football are different. So esports is a blanket umbrella that covers a plethora of games. But I think Paul, what would be really interesting is if you can just kind of detail, as you have done at the launch, just what an esports gamer looks like, because I think that shatters some stereotypes that people might have.
Yeah, I could, because, you know, we have grown up with video. I was a video gamer in the 80s and played for fun and never expected it to kind of grow to this level with leagues and competitions. But I think there is a... And it's fading fast, actually, to be fair. It's fading fast. 10 years ago, I was often asked, oh, you're a professional video game commentator. How weird.
It does sound weird when you say it that.
But I don't get asked that very often anymore. It's kind of accepted. You commentate on video games. Oh, cool. That sounds like a really great job. And likewise with the players. You know, these players aren't overweight, deprived of sun, living in the basement, and playing video games for 15 hours a day.
These are not.
And I think that's often we think of video game players as if they're addicted to video games, as if they're, you know, these really unhealthy, unfit people. And there probably are people out there like that, but that's not what esports is. These players are looking for minute edges to make them better than the next player that they play. And they play at such a high level that it is very difficult for us to understand what an edge is that would give them. So an edge could be that that morning their dietitian has said to them, okay, guys, we're playing at 2 o'clock this afternoon, so I want you all this morning to have a fish breakfast. I think it's going to make you, it's going to invigorate you, it's going to make you feel fresh, it's going to be focused, it's brain food, allow you to have the right reactions. I don't want you to drink any power drinks this morning, I want you to drink water. You know, those are the kind of things they're looking at now to try and figure out how can we have just a minute edge against the team that we're about to play. And there are lots of other things involved, you know, tactics, strategy, aim, position, all of the different skills that they need to play the game. But that's almost a given. It's the same in football, you know. I'm sure Lionel Messi doesn't get a lecture before he goes out onto the pitch that says, mate, if you could just kick the ball really well and run with it a couple of times, and if you, when you run, please don't look down at the ball. Can you just look straight ahead, because that's much better. I'm pretty sure he doesn't get coached like that.
Yeah.
Because he already knows how to do those things. They're a given. The sort of things he's given is, you know, nutrition control and water control and breathing exercises and all sorts of other different things that are going to help him deliver his absolute best on the day.
Yeah.
And that's no different to esports players. So these guys are young, they're healthy, they're fit, you know, and they're going to the gym on a regular basis because they understand fit body, fit mind, and that, again, relates to better reaction times and so on. So it's a world away from, you know, when we think of the overweight player sitting in the basement not coming up for air.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, that's, you know, as you say, it is a stereotype, and you see the nerd persona as such. But, I mean, these guys are now our future rock stars. I mean,
They are our current rock stars. Go and check out YouTube right now. Mm. You know, I was talking to Enzo Scarcella's children, who came to the launch event. Enzo is the CMO for Telcom. He brought his children along. And his son was chatting to me backstage. And you know, I said to him, you know, who are your heroes? Who do you love watching? And he said, you know, I really love PewDiePie, and I really love tuning into KSI. Now, you guys might not have ever heard of those guys, but they're massive YouTube stars that play video games. They are the rock stars of today.
Mm. So when you say, you know, they're YouTube stars, so they do they hook up their console or their game, and then people sit there and watch it via YouTube, or is it done via portal?
Absolutely. Yeah, and they're more the entertainment side of video games rather than the, you know, strictly competitive side of esports. But they're still part of our realm. They're still part of our world. And they're worshipped by young people now, because young people don't watch television the way we used to. I do remember my mum would say to me, Paul, if you're going down the park to play football, make sure you're back at 7 o'clock, because Star Wars is on BBC One. And if you're not back on time, it's not going to be on ever again. You're going to miss it. That's the world I lived in.
We
live in a world which is on demand. It's wherever we want it to be. It's on whatever we want it to be. We're connected. And today's young children are very savvy about that kind of stuff. And you know, they don't care about VHS cassettes or you know, tapes or even vinyl. You know, they live in a very digital world where they can get whatever they want when they want it. And esports is actually on the cusp of that. It's almost leading the way in many ways for video game streaming over the last 10 years.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about when I came across something else on YouTube as well, where these guys commentate as such. You know, they're busy showing other people how they got through a smoke grenade, or they can use the knife, a Bowie knife or whatever, and how to throw it. Does that fit more on your side, Paul, as a commentator, or are these actually players? I think the names I saw was Martin,
players.
Like Two Martin or something, and Tamer. I don't know, those weird names. Did you see any of those names, Brett?
I've seen a few of the names that have been there. It's been quite interesting looking at doing some research, Paul. I'm trying to get used to the guy that is, get more information about the guy that is Red Eye and what you do. But I've seen some of the more humorous things that people don't really expect from an e-gaming solution. I mean, you've had streaking in the Copenhagen games, and you guys taking their clothes off, and it's just something you don't think of as streaking in a virtual space, but these guys take it to a level. I mean, it really is a sports in every sense of the
that's the point, isn't it? It has all of the different aspects that most sports have, and including training videos. I think the difference is for us is that fans are so much more closer to the personalities, the celebrities and the players, and that's got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah,
you know, it's very difficult to go to a Formula One race these days and actually meet these superstar Formula One drivers, because they're so mollycoddled and shut off from everyone, and it's such an exclusive arena.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this particular sport is that everyone's so close. I can go on Twitter right now and I can send a tweet to an esports star, and the likelihood is there's a higher chance that he's going to reply.
He's connected to it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Paul, I'm going to put you on hold for 1 second. We've got to pay the bills quickly, and I want to pick up on that same thing about Twitter.
When you're in the back seat with four multicolored aliens and a talking bear, you don't ask questions. Questions like,
where are we going anyway?
Can I have another cookie?
Mom, are we there yet?
Because when you can watch Teletubbies, Winnie the Pooh, and all the best kid shows online anytime for 99 Rand a month with Showmax, a long road trip goes by a whole lot faster. So get to showmax.com and get your 7-day free trial.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Back with the Futurology. We're here with the two Bretts and the guys from DGL South Africa talking about gaming. And we got Paul Chaloner, the Red Eye commentator, for more than a decade. And I think that's phenomenal, Paul, if you're still there.
Yeah.
The fact that you've been doing this as a career for a decade now is something that most people don't actually have any sort of perspective of. How was it in the early days? How has it changed? And after you've answered that, we'll dispel some of the stigmas around gaming today.
Sure. It's changed an awful lot, as you'd probably expect. And, you know, esports has now become very mainstream now. It's talked about in the press and the news. It's on national TV and what have you. So it's very different to what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I think best analogy I can give you was that 10 years ago, I paid £800 for a flight to fly out to Dallas and paid my own way to the tournament. Didn't get paid to go and commentate at it. And instead, went for 3 days and commentated at QuakeCon in Dallas for free and on my own dime, just to prove that it was something that the tournament should have.
That's awesome.
Because people would enjoy the games more, they'd appreciate the player's skill more, and we're there to tell a story, you know, as any commentator in any sport is. So we, in the early days, many of us, I think there were, you know, there weren't many, probably a dozen of us trying to do this kind of stuff, and we were, in a way, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but we were very much the trailblazers of what we now have, because we had to prove the concept first. It sounds almost extraordinary now that it's the equivalent of saying we never had commentators at Premier League football matches, and they just aired the match, and you got to watch it. Without them, we'd lose so much, wouldn't we, of the passion and the excitement around a great goal or a great piece of play, and that's no different for esports. So we've come an awful long way.
Yeah.
And most of the time I was doing, I mean, in 2002 I was doing internet radio using a Winamp plugin, and commentating games to 50 or 100 people.
Mm. Yeah.
And now I'm standing in Madison Square Garden, going out to 5,000 people in the audience or 10,000 people in the audience, and millions of people around the world, live on IPTV or on ESPN or Sky or BBC. It's an incredible change.
Yeah, I'm just listening to this, and the whole reason I wanted to do this show today is because, yeah, it's kind of just blowing up. You know, we've always thought of games as something you do in a recreational environment. I mean, I remember when the game Splinter Cell came out. That was what I call PK, which was before my son was born. And I had time to play games. I think I have a Sony PlayStation 2. And my wife would find me asleep in the chair, still holding on to the wireless remote, because I wasn't prepared to give up until I got through, you know, whatever that level was that I was doing.
Right.
But, you know, so what this has done is it's actually said to anyone, you know, you can be a rock star. Here's a new medium to be a rock star in. But the one thing that I'd like to find out, and I didn't really see anything online, what's happening with young girls? Are we seeing, like, I don't want to say like we're going out there to try and encourage girls to play games, but are we seeing girls coming to the fray? Are they, you know, because it's not a physical thing anymore. They don't have to be physically stronger than the guys to beat them at rugby. Their fingers and thumbs have to work faster and quicker.
It's a great question, and it's one I'm very passionate about as well. It's we do have a number of ladies playing at a high level in a number of different games and being very successful as well. They aren't as prevalent, it's absolutely true, but I think it's more historical more than anything else. I think we, for whatever reason, our previous generation, you know, a lot of the boys gravitated naturally towards video games and a lot of the girls didn't, and I think we're now seeing that, unfortunately, because it means, you know, we've got less girls playing. But if you look at studies in America on general casual gaming, there are actually more women playing video games in America than there are men. So it's changing very fast.
You need to find
fast.
Some of these girls.
yeah, absolutely. You know, and because it's changing, I think what we'll see now over the coming few years, and I really do hope that we do, is that we'll see more women competing in the top ends of esports. We've just had the first female playing in the LCS, for instance, which is the European League for League of Legends, which Riot Games run, and that's fantastic. We finally see a breakthrough, and it will be aspirational to other women that are playing video games at a high level that they can make it as well. Because as you rightly said, physically, there's no reason that we can't compete on an even scale. So you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more women involved. And as I said, some of the most successful people in esports are women. So
okay.
It's great.
A question's just come through here, which I didn't even think of. You know, because these games are played in teams, and you've got these leagues and teams, are we currently seeing, or are we going to see this whole buying and selling of players? You know, like with soccer teams.
It's already
begun.
Yeah, it's begun.
Yeah, it's already begun. You know, big story this week is FaZe Gaming, who've bought out a Counter-Strike team. Allegedly, it's for hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've seen League of Legends teams bought up for more than $1 million to go and play in the leagues in the US. Conglomerates of sports companies and sports teams who are now looking at different teams in esports as to how they can sign them up and make them part of their team as an organization. So it's already begun.
Sure. That's
a Russian, one of Russia's wealthiest men, wanted to plow, I think it was $100 million into one of the esports team
Virtus
at the time.
Pro.
Virtus Pro, wow. Yeah, over time. So,
jeez.
And we've, even locally, you know, we may not have that kind of environment, but we've already built in transfer leagues, transfer windows into the leagues, so that, you know, as this kind of scenario happens, that the movements of players, you know, within the Masters, within the DGL is governed. So that as players move and that kind of stuff, that there are things in place to govern how players move from one side to another. So it's on its way.
The thing that I love about gaming, and it's always been the driving force behind new innovation in tech. It's always been the reason for people to get better resolution screens, to get a faster, more accurate mouse, and to get better processing and all that. It seems like it's going to do the same thing to the sports world as well. I mean, there's so much analytics available behind these games. How many shots were fired? What was the accuracy rate? Who was your best player? Like immediately, real-time data. And it seems like there's an opportunity now that the gaming environment, moving into more of a sports-focused thing, is going to actually start innovating the way sports are reported as well.
And what's exciting about that is we've even seen South Africans playing on that statistical front. So one of the guys, Ben Knoxville Steenhuisen, you know, has worked with Paul overseas as a statistician, you know, at some of the big events. So, and also on the shotcasting front, you know, we've a guy called Trevor Quickshot Henry. He was one of our best gamers in COD, and led a local team, and went overseas, got a shotcasting job, and now, you know, is one of the top shotcasters in League of Legends. Shotcasting to millions of people.
Just explain what shotcasting is to those that don't know.
Well, Paul, why don't you tell the shotcasting how it came about?
So a shoutcaster is usually shortened to just caster these days, but it's basically a commentator. So, you know, when you think of football commentators that commentate the game itself and take you through the action, we generally call them shoutcasters. It's a historical thing. For those that are as old as I am, when we first commentated, we used Winamp. Media player, and it had a thing called a shoutcast plugin, which you could then use to stream on internet radio. So we became shoutcasters by de facto.
So it's the same as we still refer to people as disc jockeys, even though there's no discs that are
indeed.
Okay,
indeed.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's you know what you would see in cricket or rugby. This guy's Paul plays a different kind of role now. He's more of a host. So more like, you know, in the rugby, as you see, like, you know, if you're, you know, watching the box play or whatever, then, you know, Nasputer and those guys are the experts, and then there's the host. And so Paul will play more of that role, either there or on the stage, actually in the stadium and that kind of stuff. So it's like really, and they've got, along with that, they'll have different roles. They'll have the guy who nabs the player as he come out, almost like on the pitch kind of guy,
yeah,
as you would have in rugby. They've got guys like that, so they'll grab the players as they come out for a quick update. So, I mean, some of the production teams that guys like Paul work with, I mean, you know, go up, you know, 50, 60, 70, and then in a full-size organization, like, you know, a big event like Intel Extreme Masters, I mean, I think Paul said is working with up to, you know, 600 people in an event. So it's a massive, like, massive organization that puts together high quality broadcasting. And the viewership figures, I mean, in the finals of LOL last year, they had 14 million concurrent viewers watching that game.
14 million.
Yeah. And 36 million, I think, watched over the duration of the tournament. And I think 58 million watched through the duration of that $18 million tournament. So the figures are staggering.
These numbers, they matter. I mean, Brett, but when you go to a rugby game, like at Ellis
you
Park,
you can't fit them all into that stadium.
60,000 people or something. Yeah. You're talking 14 million.
Yeah. I mean, also, I just want to say on the end of that, because you brought up rugby, that 14 well, million.
I didn't bring up League cricket Legends. On purpose.
but the 14 million that watched League of Legends World Finals last year, that's more than we get watching rugby in our league system on TV in the UK for the whole season.
Wow.
Just to give you a perspective.
So you've made me think of something else when we talk about watching it. And I mentioned earlier, and you said we watch it on YouTube and Portal. Now, the commercial side of me says, how do I make money letting people watch esports? You know, if it's on YouTube, it's free. Or is it the same model as anything else on YouTube? Like, you get a percentage of the ads that appear, or do you actually charge people to watch, like, to get the access, pay-per-view?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't think we have a show long enough that can cope with the answer for all of that, but I'll give you a summary. I think it's from a number of different ways. So when you talk about monetization, you're talking about it from an event organizer's point of view, and they can sell sponsorship. They can have sponsors actually sponsoring the tournament, so it can become the Intel Extreme Masters, for example, or the next Gfinity Championship or whatever.
Okay.
But really, it's about brands who want to get involved want exposure for their brand to a very specific niche audience. And when I say niche, I'm still talking, you know, millions and millions of people, but I'm talking about the demographic. And our demographic is very strongly associated with 16 to 30-year-olds. So, you know, the millennials, as we call them now. Mm. And these people, in fact, Gfinity last year, the company I work for right now, our viewership last year, 90% of the people that tuned in were aged 16 to 29.
Mm. Yeah.
90%. If you compare that to the English Premier League, over the whole season, less than 10% of that same audience watched English football in the UK.
That's crazy.
So we have a massive open access to these kind of people. But the problem they have is that these people are very savvy, they're very smart, they're very switched on, they're very demanding. So you have to be very clever about how you advertise. And sometimes what happens is that a company, a brand will come into esports and think it's just like traditional sport. They can just throw loads of advertising at it and it just doesn't work. And there's a reason for that. These people, as I said, they're savvy. They want to know what you're doing. Why are you doing this? Is it for an ulterior motive? Or are you genuinely passionate about their video game and their sport? And so when people come in and they're very organic and very active, then they tend to get a really good set of feedback. So early adopters, Red Bull, Monster, those kind of companies, they're already involved in esports and have been for, you know, 4 or 5 years already. But we're seeing all sorts of different companies come in because they cannot advertise in a traditional way on TV or radio like they used to the same demographic. I mean, American Express is a great example. Why on earth would American Express advertise to 16 to 29-year-olds? It doesn't make any sense.
I could see that.
You know, their background is over 50 business travelers, CEOs, MDs, marketing executives, and what have you. But they've already figured out that tomorrow's MDs and CEOs and marketing chiefs and all the rest of it are today's 16 to 29-year-olds. And they want to put money into an activity that those same people enjoy now. And I think it's a genius piece of advertising and branding because they've sponsored League of Legends. They've allowed people to have Teemo, which is one of the characters from the game, plastered on a card,
the
American Express card. And you can actually have that in your wallet, right? So that's a really cool thing for the nerds. Brilliant.
But well, and the non-nerds.
Whoops. We just lost Paul.
I think we just lost him. We actually have to wrap this up. So basically, I think quickly, from your side, Steve, give us a website, give us somewhere where we can go or the listeners can go to get more involved in this. And maybe we can have a quick little follow up on Twitter afterwards from Paul.
Sure. So if you want to kind of get onto the league site and start registering a profile and that kind of stuff, it's digitalgamingleague.co.za. And if you want to find out all the news and what's happening and that stuff, just go to telcomgaming.co.za.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Brett. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And keep your screens clean and your knob shiny. CliffCentral.com.